Welcome to the Clubhouse with Shane Bacon, presented by TeeOff.com by the PGA Tour. I am your host, Shane Bacon. We have Billy Horschel on the line, five-time PGA Tour winner, and of course the 2014 FedEx Cup champion. We talk about his friendship with Tiger Woods and what needs to change mentally to compete better in major championships and his life on and off the golf course. And it was a great conversation. Billy is a great guy, and I was happy to have him on. But before we get to the interview, I just wanted to let you know that TPC Deer Run is going to look amazing on your television, and you can experience that golf course in person. Just hop on teeoff.com by the PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour, and book a tee time where the pros play or at any one of the website's thousands of golf courses. Plus, on teeoff.com, golfers book fee-free. That's right, no booking fees. Every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener here of this Clubhouse podcast, this one you're listening to right now, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with a single-use promo code TEEOFFBACON. That is at teeoff.com by the PGA Tour, and use TEEOFFBACON, you'll save 25%. And also, when it comes to golf equipment, we always want the newest driver. We want a golf ball that goes 5 yards further. Maybe you want some new shoes to make you look all spiffy and professional. But one thing that never gets enough attention is the one thing you use on every golf shot, the thing that holds and protects your clubs and is an essential part of your on-course fashion. That's your golf bag. Haven't changed your bag in 5 or even 10 years? Well, shame on you. Treat yourself to an upgrade today with the Ogio Cirrus bag. It's fully loaded with all the features you want in a golf bag, yet still remarkably light. You can carry it effortlessly while also protecting those brand new golf clubs you have, complete with a water-resistant pocket for your valuables and the rapid access pocket, making it quick and easy to get a new ball after you send one into the backyard. Hopefully you don't do that much. Check out Ogio.com or your local golf retailer to get your hands on the Cirrus today. So stop carrying around that golf bag you've had since the 90s. It's time to upgrade. Ogio, the world's best bags. And Billy and I went a little long, so no more reason to hear me do this. Let's get to the interview. Billy Horschel up next. And we welcome into the clubhouse for the first time Billy Horschel, 31 years old, and has won on the PGA Tour 5 times, including, of course, the 2014 FedEx Cup. And Billy, I want to get to plenty of things, including that FedEx Cup. My first question is this. I like to ask tour players this because I'm always interested. You're just a few years younger than me. What was the first adult set of clubs you ever owned? Do you remember?
Yeah, I can't remember what age I got them, but I remember Titleist came out the new 990s, I think they were, the new cavi backs that they built. I think I was probably around, I'd be around 13, 14 years old. It was the first like true set of clubs I got. They weren't knockoff type deal. They were first, you know, true manufacturer set that I got, that my parents got me.
There is nothing better than as a kid getting your like a real golf club. I mean, I remember I got the 975D Titleist driver when I was like, I don't know, maybe 14 or 15 years old for Christmas. And it was easily the most excited I think I was maybe in my entire teenage years. I went outside, I hit balls like 20 degrees outside. I was like, I don't care. I'm hitting this driver like as much as I can.
Yeah, I remember when I got my set. You know what I was the most excited about was having a 2-iron. And I thought it was the greatest thing in the world to have this 2-iron. And I striped it. But, I mean, I look back and I'm like, you know, just thinking about having a 2-iron that no one on tour. I mean, there's guys have driving irons now, but it's not a true 2-iron in a sense anymore.
No, that thing will hurt your hands. I was reading last week, you mentioned you were on the putting green with Tiger Woods. There was a story out, and there was a quote that came across. You said, he's a good friend of mine. So considering, you know, what Tiger has done for the game and what he's done kind of for this generation of golfers and where he stands in the pyramid of the greatest ever, is it weird to call him a good friend?
You know, when you think about growing up and him being a role model, someone I look to and someone that, you know, I try to emulate in golf. And now I look at that, he's a friend of mine. He's someone that, you know, we text back and forth. And, you know, when you see each other, you know, it's just like seeing a buddy type deal. So it's weird, you know, to have that kind of relationship with him, you know, looking back at myself as, you know, a teenager growing up and having him as a role model. So, yeah, it is a little weird to be able to call Tiger Woods a friend.
Yeah, I could only imagine, like, when you were putting his number in your phone, I bet that was a moment where you're like, is this seriously happening? Like, am I saving his cell phone number in my own phone? Because, you know, I mean, again, you were growing up watching him do what he did in his early 20s. I mean, you were like, if one day I can get to, you know, 10, 15, 20% of what this guy is, it's amazing. And then I feel like he's done this to a lot of young players too, as he's kind of taken these guys under his wing and become buddies with them.
Yeah, you know, I think my relationship's, you know, a little bit different than maybe a Jason Day or other guys. You know, I'll ask him for advice here and there, but, you know, when I really talk to him, it's not really much about golf. You know, it's about, you know, our kids and what his kids are doing and what he's doing outside of golf and this and that. You know, I haven't asked him much advice about golf and how to handle things and, you know, if you're struggling with this or that, you know, what do you do? So I know that's something Jason Day's done a lot of and some other guys have done. But for me, it's like, you know, I'm sure he loves doing that, but there also comes a time like we all do, like, okay, you know, I'm sick and tired of like people asking me all these questions. I how did I did this, how I did that. And obviously he wants to share his wealth, but sometimes he's like, God, can, you know, and I don't know, you know, what relationship those guys have with them. But you know, I'm just always asking about his kids, what they're into, you know, everything else, what he's into. And, you know, so that's the way it is for me. And then, you know, we're talking about golf here and there a little bit when we see each other.
Yeah. That brings up another question. What percentage of your conversations between the ropes are about golf? So you're playing on a Thursday and Friday and you've got a group of a couple of guys, you know, you're playing a tournament. When you guys are having a conversation, is it ever about golf or is it mostly about other stuff?
You know, it's probably 10%, 15, maybe the most is 20% you talk about golf. You know, you talk about other things. You know, I play with Stuart Sink and Jimmy Walker at Quicken Loans, and, you know, they're two big barbecue guys, love grilling, this and that. And, you know, I like to grill, but I'm not into it like they are. I mean, they're talking about grills and how this grill is better than this grill and, you know, how to, you know, season stuff up and yeah, this and that. And so, I mean, you know, they were talking for that for about, you know, 4, 5, 6, 7 holes type deal. So, you know, it depends on who's in your group and, you know, what kind of relationship you have with them. You know, and then from there, you have your interest, that common interest that you guys talk about.
Yeah, I mean, you talk a little bit about your focus on the golf course, and you've mentioned, you know, in press conferences and in interviews you've had that, you know, there are times where it's tough to keep yourself focused and engaged for 18 holes, 72 holes, and all that stuff. I always have thought about this because, you know, you start the season, you're in Hawaii, you know, you're excited and you're amped up to go, and then, you know, you kind of go through the West Coast swing. And I'm assuming around this time, it probably feels a little bit more like a grind than it does maybe at any other point in the year. Is that something that you battle with? Is that something you feel like other players battle with? And how do you kind of cope with keeping yourself mentally engaged throughout an entire season?
You know, I think every player is different. For me, you know, it depends on how the year is going. You know, if the year has been going well, I don't think at this time of year, you know, it's that tough to focus because I've been playing so well and I have so much momentum. It's a little bit easier. But if it's been like a grind where the season's just been beating you down and, you know, you've been putting a lot of work in and you haven't been seeing success, it's tough to sometimes focus and see the positive at the end of the tunnel. For me, when it comes to focus, a little bit is, you know, on Thursday and Friday, I just have trouble. You know, I'm into golf, but I'm not into it the way I would be on Saturday and Sunday if I had a chance to win. You know, it's just something when I get near the lead on the weekend, you know, it's just something innate in me that allows me just to, you know, focus in a little bit more, just allows me to make clearer decisions. It's easier for me. I just love that adrenaline flowing through, you know, the body type deal. And, you know, Thursday, Friday, you know, it's sort of, you're like, okay, you know, I can't win the day type deal. You know, I can get up near the lead and play a really good round of golf, but, it just changes a little bit for me. So one thing I've done a little bit the last few months, and I've been trying to limit how much I have conversations on the golf course with my fellow pros. And that may sound bad, but and way it works is that I can talk anybody's ear off, and it's not that hard for me to do. And so that what that does is it maybe takes a little bit of the focus away from what I'm trying to do on Thursday and Friday. So I've just been trying to, you know, not, I still have my conversations, but, you know, when walk off a tee, I'm not the one starting the conversation all the time, like I, you know, I'm known to do. So just still trying to at least allow myself to detach from, you know, the golf aspect of it and trying to carry on a conversation and literally just walk down the fairway with just, you know, no thoughts and just looking around and enjoying the scenery.
Yeah, I mean, I always have wondered about Thursday, Friday, and I feel like it's not just the players that kind of battle with it. I mean, I think tournaments battle with it. I think the tour battles with it to a certain extent because, you know, as you said, there's no trophies handed out on Thursday and Friday and really none on Saturday. At least you get in the hunt on Saturday. You might be in the final group or two. I just have always found those first 2 days, they must seem more like a job than the weekend because, you know, you make the weekend, you're in the hunt. You're battling, you're competing. That's what you want to be doing. But on Thursday, you know, you might be in a group that goes off late. There might not be anybody out there watching, to be honest. And, I mean, I think that's what a lot of pros go through those first 2 days is it feels like you're kind of grinding through the first 36 holes.
Yeah, I mean, that's the way it's felt for me for the last year and a half. I mean, I've missed more cuts the last, you know, year and a half than I normally have type deal. You know, I usually have only missed, you know, maybe 4 or 5 cuts a year at most. And so I missed, you know, last year I missed double digits. And right now I think I'm close to that. Hopefully I don't have to hit the double digit MC mark this year, but it's just one of those things where it's been more of a grind for me on Thursday and Friday. I thought more about making a cut, you know, worried about making a cut instead of in the past, you know, I haven't really worried about it. I've always known, hey, I'm going to make the cut. I'm more or less, okay, what I need to do, get myself in position to win this tournament type deal. And that's what, you know, Tiger has done very well. And that's what Jordan does very well. And Rory and Jason and Dustin, you know, those guys do. And that's what, you know, I sort of did, you know, a few years ago. I may not get myself in that position as often as they did, but I'm trying to get myself back in that mentality of, okay, hey, let's not worry about the cut. You know, you're good enough to make the cut. Your game's good enough to make the cut on a weekly basis. You know, you need to focus on the right thing, and the right thing being playing a great round of golf and putting yourself in position going forward for the next 3 days and next 2 days and for the last round of having a chance to win this tournament.
Yeah, you won earlier this year. You won at the Zurich, the team event, second year going. You won with Scott Piercy. And I was rewatching some of the highlights this morning, and he hit a putt on 16, and your reaction was unbelievable. You, I mean, it looked like there was no way the putt could miss, and somehow it misses. And then you hit a putt on 18 that has the exact same thing. It looks like there's no way it's not going to go in, and it kind of rolls over the edge, and then it's about 2.5 feet. How nervous were you knowing that, you know, in a normal tour event, you'd go up there and have to knock that putt in and it'd be on you? But now your partner has to do that, and you have no control over what's going down. Was that more nerve-wracking, or were you just comfortable that Piercy was going to knock it in?
You know, it was a little nerve-wracking because, you know, Scott has always been a great ball striker, and if anything, he struggles with his putting. And he actually putted really beautifully for the last 3 days of that event. And so, you know, here I have like a 20-footer for birdie type deal, and, you know, we got a one-shot lead, and Duff and Perez have like a 12-footer for birdie. And I'm like, in the back of my mind, I'm like, I want to make this. And I'm like, I'm going to give this putt a run. So I don't have to, you know, I don't want to leave it in Jason's hand because he has been putting great all day. I don't want to leave it in his hand to make a putt. And he's really good. Once you get him outside 10 feet, he's really good. He looks statistically on tour from 10 to 20 feet. He's always up there near the top of the putting stats for makes from 10 to 20 feet. So I knew, you know, it was sort of in his range where he could feel free and let it go. And, you know, obviously he knew we had to make it, so that makes it a little bit easier to free up the stroke. So, you know, Scott comes over, we're talking about it, not really talking about the putt. But I said, dude, I think I'm going to make this. I said, I'm going to make this so that we don't have to worry about them, you know, having, you know, whether they're going to make or miss. And he said, sounds good. He said, the last thing he said to me though, is make sure you don't hit it too far by the hole. Don't leave me a long one type deal. And so I said, yeah, sure. No problem. And I knew, because for me, if it went 3-4 feet by the hole, no big deal. I mean, I'm really solid inside 5 feet, so I wouldn't have worried at all. And I hit it and it just missed. And I saw how far it went by and it was like 2 feet, maybe a touch more. And I wasn't too worried because it was really a simple putt, left center at most, you know, don't worry about it. And I pretty much just went up to Scott and I said, hey, don't overthink it, left center, get up there, hit it type deal. And, I wasn't nervous at all because I felt like, you know, it was such a short putt. It was simple. I mean, for a tour player to miss a putt inside 3 feet, they have to do something really bad. So, obviously it went in and it went around the hole a few times, but, that made me nervous when I saw the ball. I was more nervous seeing the ball go around, the hole than before you hit the putt.
Yeah, it is such a strange thing when you play golf. And I mean, everybody listening has gone through this in a team type of match or something like that. But when you play golf in your lonesome, if you're playing a one-on-one match, I feel like the nerves aren't there like they are when you've got a partner. And you win, you know, the team event doing this. But at times, there are moments where you could hang your partner out to dry. Do you feel like there's not as much control in those situations, and it is a little bit more stressful for players? Or do you enjoy that and kind of embrace that, knowing you've got a partner there that's got a ton of talent?
I think it's a both. I mean, sometimes if you've got a good partner that you know you can rely on, that, you know, he can hit a good shot type deal, then I think it makes it easier. You know, I'm probably more nervous watching them hit a shot. You know, I'm like, man, I want them to hit a good shot, than I am myself. You know, if I'm in a tight situation or got a tough shot type deal, you know, I'm just, I feel comfortable when the ball's in my hands type deal. When it's not in my hands is when, you know, I'm like, it's tough. You don't have control. You have no control of the outcome when it's not in your hands. So, you know, it's like a basketball player, you know, LeBron James, he wants the ball in his hand, you know, with the last second shot, you know, coming down. You know, I'm the same way. I want to be able to be hitting the shot or have a chance to make the putt, you know, coming down to the end or anywhere during the tournament.
Yeah, you don't want to kick it out to J.R. Smith, that's what you're saying? That's not your not something you're interested in doing?
You know, J.R. Smith's not too bad, but, you know, in the sense of golf, you know, if you feel pretty confident in your ability, you always want to be the one, you know, with the shot.
Well, you've won five times. You, of course, won the FedEx Cup 4 years ago. And as I was kind of looking over your resume, the one thing that I feel like is missing is kind of success in the major championships. I know that's something that you focus on. What do you feel like that happens during those 4 weeks where you don't play your best golf? And what are you working on to get better when you get to the Masters and the U.S. Opens, the British Opens and the PGAs, to contend in those and possibly win a major?
You know, if you look at, like you said, you look at my record, you look at my career, you know, I've got five wins. I got a FedEx Cup. You know, I've had chances to win, you know, but really the majors have been the area where I haven't really done much other than one top 10 at the U.S. Open in 2013. I think my next best one is a Masters in 2016 with a T15, T17, somewhere around there. You know, it's sort of weird because the U.S. Open is probably the most, is the one major that fits me the best. And just because it requires a lot of great ball striking and really good putting from inside 10 feet. Then, you know, I probably sucked myself out a little bit too much for the U.S. Open, put a little too much pressure on myself in the majors, especially U.S. Open. But at the same time, I was talking about this in my caddy Josh just in regular events a couple weeks ago. I think really I probably may have played a little too conservative in majors because, you know, you're trying not to make that big number. You're trying not to make that mistake. And so when you do that, you limit your chances for birdies type deal. You know, when you're playing too conservative when you have certain clubs in your hand. So I think, you know, that's one aspect that, you know, when I play the PGA Championship here in a month, you know, I'm going to have a different mentality going. I'm going to try and go out there and play a great round of golf every day. Try and go out there and shoot the course record. Obviously, I'm not going to do something stupid, but I'm going to be more aggressive in that aspect. And I think the other thing is my short game in the past hasn't been great where I can rely on it. And that's one thing you need in majors is a solid short game. And, you know, if you look at my stats now, it still says I'm not a great short game player, but, you know, sometimes it's funny. I say stats tell the truth, but sometimes they lie. And I feel like it's lie in this sense, in the sense that, you know, my percentages of getting up and down isn't very high, but I feel like I have more confidence in my short game. I feel like I can rely on it. You know, short game numbers this year are a little bit off because the beginning of the year I didn't putt really well. And so now I've started putting better type deal. And then also, you know, I miss greens in the wrong spots, which doesn't help. It makes it tougher to get the ball up and down. So, but when it comes back to majors, really, that's one area I really want to, you know, going forward, I want to be better. And because that's where you make your name in the game of golf. Obviously, winning all these tournaments is great. And a FedEx Cup is up there with a major. But, you know, when people look back at the history of the game of golf, you know, you're judged off pretty much the four majors. You know, what have you done in the four majors? And so that's something that, you know, doesn't keep me up at night, but I think about.
Yeah, it's interesting when you look, and you kind of got to throw out some of the outliers, you know, the Jordan Spieths and the Rorys, and I guess now the Justin Thomases of the world. But, you know, historically, it's taken golfers, you know, around the age of 33 mm-hmm. until they're kind of comfortable yep. in majors. And we've seen players kind of break that mold, you know, after Tiger did it. But for the most part, it does take players a little bit of time to get comfortable there. And I mean, I'm sure there's players you can look at, you know, to keep yourself yep. kind of mentally there and focused on the majors, like a Sergio Garcia or a Darren Clark, who won a little bit later in their career once they felt like they were kind of capable and mentally able to get there and feel comfortable.
Yeah, you're exactly right. And, you know, I started doing that recently because, you know, where I feel like I should be in the game of golf is not where I am right now. And especially where I feel like my talent level is, I feel like I should be up higher. And, you know, we are where we are supposed to be. You know, that's why I always try and remind myself. That's what my team tries to remind me. That's what my sports psychologist, Brett McKay, we talk about a little bit. And so one person I've looked at, you know, a lot lately, probably in the last year, I really, you know, took a look at his career and sort of trying to, you know, maybe model my next, you know, going in my 30s now after him is Justin Rose. You know, Justin Rose won, I think, the U.S. Open around 32 or 33, if I'm correct, you know, in 2013 at Marion. And, you know, before that, he was a really solid player. Had won some great events and done some great stuff. But, you know, he hadn't really taken that next step into playing consistent golf in majors. And so, obviously, you know, he wins the U.S. Open. And, you know, every year now you see his name up there at the Masters and at the U.S. Open and the British and PGA. You know, when you go into a tournament, a major, he's one of the top 10 guys on the list, top five guys that you think, hey, this guy could win this week. So I've sort of, you know, looked at it that way and looked at guys, you know, who, you know, have, you know, really taken it the next step in their 30s. And, you know, like you said, it's an outlier with Rory and Tiger and Jordan Spieth and Justin Thomas, you know, winning majors in your early 20s type deal. And, you know, that's sort of, is awesome. But for me, it hurts because I'm such an information guy. I want to know so much information. And when I see somebody do something that I haven't done, then I put more pressure on myself to want to accomplish it. And I know it for a fact, I hinder my progress going forward because of it.
Well, something you have done that I found pretty amazing, and correct me if this is wrong, you went to Q school four times and you got through three times. Is that right?
Yeah, I went to Q school four times. First time out of college, I got was 2009. Got through. Had a wrist injury, you know, 2 months into the season, so I was done. And decided to go back to Q school. Didn't need to in 2010, but did just because I had to play a lot of golf. And I was like, hey, you know, if I go back, I can improve. You know, get unlimited amount of events now compared to the maybe 26 I was going to get for that upcoming year. And I got through and didn't keep my card or. Got conditional status for 2011, but then that's the 2011 year is when I didn't get through Q school, and then played on the PGA Tour on conditional status and went back to Q school in 2012 and got through again. So yeah, I've got a decent track record, you know, with Q school. 3 out of 4 is not too bad. The funny thing is that. The 1 year I didn't get through Q school, I knew I wasn't going to get through Q school. I just knew mentally, the game wasn't where it needed to be, and I wasn't where my mind wasn't where it needed to be. And I just didn't feel good going into that Q school in 2011. But 2009, 2010, and 2012, I was like, I'm getting through Q school. There's no doubt about it. And I did. So, but it's funny, you know, just to have a track record like that, an event that, you know, has been a stress ball for so many people.
Yeah, I mean, it's one of those things that it kind of spits out people a lot. I mean, Q school has done that historically, and I know there are people that probably look back at their collegiate careers or their amateur careers or earlier in their professional careers, But you have to look back at what you did at Q School, and it had to help you initially believe in yourself, and it still has to probably help you if you ever have those moments where you're kind of lacking confidence to go, you know, look what I did in the biggest pressure-packed situation for any pro golfer. Because, you know, if you finish second in a major, you know, you still get a pretty good Monday direct deposit. But if you don't make it through Q School, you know, you're playing, you know, Hooters Tour or, you know, Gateway or you know, Tight Lies Tour. I mean, there's things you got to go do that are not still being on the PGA Tour.
And you're exactly right. And I really felt like, you know, the way I try to tell people what Q School is all about and when it was still going, for me, the way I looked at it is I felt like if your talent is good enough to get through Q School, then it just becomes a mental game. You know, can you deal with the stress? Can you deal with what you're going to have to deal with, you know, going through all three stages or whatever, how many stages you have to go through? And so for me, you know, mentally, I felt like every time I went to Q School, I was the best player there. And I went in there and said, you know, I'm the best player here. If I play my game, I'm going to get through. And so I did that. And another thing I did, which I try, you know, doesn't work for everybody, and it worked for me, but I knew I had to do this because if I didn't, I was just going to think about everything. I never looked at a scoreboard in all my 4 years of Q School at any stage. The only time I looked at a scoreboard was after the final round. I never knew where I stood at any time during a tournament until after the final round.
Do you look at scoreboards now?
Yes, and they hurt me because of it.
See, listen, you got to listen to your own advice.
Especially, I know. And so I know. You know, it's a lot easier to do it in Q School because there's no scoreboards.
There's like four scoreboards, right? Now they're on every hole. But, you're like, get that thing out of my face.
Exactly. You know what? And that I've been aware of it for a long time. And I do a really, I can look at a scoreboard. There's certain times I know I can look at a scoreboard and it's not going to affect me. But human nature, whenever you look at the scoreboard, you're going to have some type of reaction. You know, it may be so minute you don't even realize it, but you're going to have some type of reaction. And for me, when I look at a scoreboard, especially on Thursday and Friday, let's say, you know, you make the turn after nine holes and you sort of happen to peek at the scoreboard and you're two over par and you see the leader at eight on the par and you're in like 120th place and you just, you know, it just messes with your mind. It affects the way you play, you know, the next nine holes and 18 holes, you know, instead of, hey, you know what? I know I'm two over par. I know guys are playing better than me. You know, if I just go out there and play a really solid next nine holes, you know, then I'll be fine. But then, you know, you do that, then who knows, you shoot three, four, five on the par and you're right back, you know, where you need to be. But, you know, you look at a scoreboard, then you start trying to press. And every time you have a birdie putt and you don't make it, you know, the information goes through your head. And so it does hinder me at certain times. And I've tried doing a better job of, especially on Thursday and Friday, not looking at one. So it doesn't affect how I play.
We'll take a quick break here from chatting with Billy Horschel to let you know that we know hiring is tough, and let me explain to you how ZipRecruiter makes it easier. You can check out ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. With their powerful matching technology, ZipRecruiter scans thousands of resumes to find people with the right experience and invite them to apply to your job. ZipRecruiter is so effective that 80% of employers, 80% who post on ZipRecruiters get a quality candidate through the site within the first day. That's unbelievable. That's way better odds than golf. With results like that, it's no wonder that ZipRecruiter is the highest rated hiring site in America. And right now, my listeners can try ZipRecruiter for free at this exclusive web address, ZipRecruiter.com/theclubhouse. That's right, ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. You know how to spell it, ZipRecruiter.com/clubhouse. ZipRecruiter, the smartest way to hire. All right, back to Billy. All right, so I have to ask about 2014 then. All right, so the Deutsche Bank at 2014, which was one of, I'd say, the biggest roller coaster moments that I can remember on tour. Did you know where you stood on the 18th hole there at TPC Boston before, obviously, you got to where you got the next 2 weeks?
Yeah, I knew exactly where I stood. You know, like I said, there's certain times where I can look at a scoreboard, you know, especially if I'm up near the lead or in the final groups coming on Sunday, you know, it's really not going to affect me because I'm playing so good. That's not going to affect me very much. But I knew where I stood on 18. I knew if I birdie, I was in the playoff with Chris Kirk, and I knew if I eagled, I would have won the tournament outright. One thing I didn't know was the FedEx thing. I knew I needed a great week at Deutsche Bank, and I didn't know exactly how good it needed to be. But I knew if I just played a great round on Sunday, I'd be fine. But yeah, I mean, unfortunately, I made a bad swing at the wrong time. And
I hate to bring up negatives, by the way. I'm not trying to bring up negatives here.
It's not even a negative. And, you know, people may look at it as a negative, but, you know, it was a positive. And my teacher, Todd Anderson, and I have talked about this because, you know, what if I win that event? Do I go on to win the BMW and the Tour Championship and win the FedEx Cup playoff? You know, so like I said, things happen for a reason in this life, and you are where you're supposed to be. And so I maybe made a bad swing at the wrong time. And I remember watching the re-air that night because I couldn't sleep. And I remember Johnny Miller I remember Roger Maltby going, he just laid this auto. He said, this may not even get to the creek or the little hazard there. And I don't know how far I got in there. But then Johnny Miller does his normal thing of the pressure got to him. Like, dude, I had no pressure on me. Like, I didn't feel any pressure at all. Literally, I just made a bad swing at the wrong time. The ball was below my feet, and the pin was sort of on the left-hand side of the green, and really you want to hit a draw in that green to that pin, and just wasn't able to. The lie just didn't allow it, so I was trying to make sure I stayed down in the shot a little bit longer so the ball wouldn't, you know, fade on me too much, and I just stayed down a hair too long and caught a little too much grass and wound up making a bogey. I walked off that 18th green. Yeah, I was a little disappointed, but I mean, I was such in a great place and mentally. I was like, man, it's been a struggle this year. I felt like I played some really good golf and haven't had a lot of great results. And this is the first week where I finally was able to put four rounds together. Wasn't able to get it done on 18, but I'm like, you know what? If I can do the same thing, you know, next week and the week after, something good is going to happen. And so I was really positive. There was no like bad feeling. I didn't wake up the next morning feeling down. I was like, dude, I can't wait to get the BMW. I can't wait to tee it up on Thursday morning.
Well, this rolls into my next question. I had David Faraday on after the Masters, and he told me, he said, you know, these guys don't get nervous anymore. And I thought it was a very interesting line. He said they don't get nervous anymore. And I don't know if it's the coaching, if it's the amateur, kind of the professional amateur resumes that these guys have and the schedules they play when they're in college and even when they're 13, 14, 15, 16 years old. It does seem like you see less players melting down. Do you sense that? Do you feel like these guys, you know, and it's not just the top 10 guys. I'm talking about, you know, 1 through 150. It seems like when they have a chance to win now in 2018, more likely than not, they actually do win. They actually are able to close it out.
Yeah, you know, I think guys are better prepared to play well and have a chance to win. But I still believe that it's tough to win on the PGA Tour. And if you look at who had chances, look who's leading on Saturday and Sunday and them not being able to close the door. I feel like I'm a really good closer. And I think my track record shows that. When I'm up near the lead, I've won – you know, I've gone ahead and closed it out or finished, you know, second or third place type deal. I just know when there's certain people up on the leaderboard, I just know, hey, this guy's not going to, you know, hold up over the last 18 holes of this event. You know, I just know mentally and, you know, that he's not as strong as I am. I know the pressure's going to get to him. I think pressure still does get to certain players, but it doesn't get to the top echelon. Because I think what they do is even when they do feel nervous, and I do this, when you're playing great and you have a chance to win, you know, you can tell yourself, hey, listen, you know, I am nervous, but I'm playing great right now. So, you know what? I'm going to figure out some way to get this job done. I'm going to figure out some way to get to the winner's circle. And one thing I've always told myself, too, when you do have, you know, you're a little nervous or excited, nervous, whatever it may be, I'm like, you know, everybody is dealing with this feeling right now. Everybody is, to some extent, more than other. But whoever deals with this feeling the best is going to be the one who comes out on top. And so that's the way I've always sort of approached it. Whenever I'm nervous type deal, you know, I've told myself a couple of things just to sort of calm myself down, put everything back in perspective, and allow, you know, what my ability and what my talent level, you know, allow that to, you know, naturally, you know, come out.
All right, I have to ask about your outfits. I don't want to call them flashy because I feel like flashy almost sounds negative. They are definitely, I would say, they're interesting. At times, they're unbelievable. If nothing else, they're very fashionable. So do you pick the outfits out? Does somebody else pick them out? And do you have final approval or non-approval from the wife?
Yeah. So every event that's not a major, I pick out the outfits out. Maybe there's one event here and there that they're asking me to wear this certain outfit or whatnot. But every non-major event, I pick out that outfit. I will sometimes consult with them if I'm sort of on the fence about, hey, will this, you know, these pants and this shirt work? I will consult with my wife. I know if when I ask my wife, Brittany, you know, what do you think? If she doesn't answer right away, I know she doesn't like it.
She's out.
There's a pause there, I know she's like, you know, that's not, you know, I'm not feeling that type deal. So, you know, but she's been great with my outfits. She helps me out with it. You know, the team at Ralph Lauren does a great job with it as well. But majors, we do get scripted. I do have veto power over any outfit that week. I have never used it. And so that's why, you know, it obviously started with octopus pants and certain other, you know, pants I've worn throughout the, you know, my career. You know, people ask me, are the octopus pants the craziest pants you've ever worn? And I'm like, no, I'm going to tell you the pants I think that sort of I was on the edge about, you know, saying no to, but the entire outfit just looked so good. I had to wear it, but the pants I wore at the 2016 Masters, I think they were pink panthers and flamingos on the pants with like a lime green. It wasn't lime green, but it was sort of a green color base to it. And so those were the pants that really was like, I'm like, man, I'm wearing these. And I wore it with a pink shirt. And I wore it on Friday, and I played really good on Thursday. So I think I shot like 4 under the first round. And I'm up there in the top 10, and I don't play good on Friday. I just didn't play good. I shot 5 over par or something, maybe 6 over par. And I make the cut, and Todd, my teacher, goes, this is it. You're not allowed to wear any printed pants anymore. Every time you've worn a printed pant, you have not played well in. And so so I didn't wear a printed pant for like a year, and I wore them somewhere recently, maybe this year or late last year. And Todd goes, what did I tell you about these printed pants? No more of them. So I may, you know, there are some printed pants, you know, in a tournament round. I may have to veto them a little bit until I sort of get the monkey off my back with them.
You got to go shoot 68. That's right. Well, that was Justin Thomas shot 63 at Erin Hills last year. And, you know, I got a chance to interview him after for Fox, and he was walking off the set, and I go, hey, by the way, nice pants. And he goes, well, if you're going to wear these pink pants, you better shoot 63. And I said, that's exactly right. Yeah. I thought it was a good line. And you're like Bones, though.
Exactly.
You got the Bones veto power. That's really nice.
Yeah, I've got it. I've never used it. I mean, I know Bones had one veto power a year with Phil, but I've never used mine. So, no. And you know what? I look at it this way. You know, they were a partner of mine. And they've been a great partner of mine for 8 years of my career. So, you know, if they're asking, if they're me representing their brand, certain pants to sort of promote something that they're doing, I'm going to do it.
Because
You know what? We're in a relationship together, and they all want to benefit, have them benefit as much as I can from them. So, you know, I just feel that's the right thing to do.
Billy, you look good, man. It looks sharp. Like even the octopus pants, I heard a rumor they're coming back.
Yeah, they are. They are. So I very lucky that, you know, with this partnership with Ralph Lauren, it's been so great that I have a collection line coming out for the PGA Championship, a five outfit look for PGA Championship. And, you know, I was involved in every detail, you know, color, you know, style of shirt, what shirt selection, material, everything. And so one thing I thought would be really cool, you know, with this being a collection, and how this all got started with the octopus pants in 2013, I said, you know what, I think we should bring them back and sort of just tweak them a little bit. So they're not the exact same, but just a little bit different. And so they're coming back. I'm wearing them on Wednesday, though, and they're in the shorts version because we can wear shorts at the PGA Championship, which
you're
is great.
That's a chicken out move. You were chickening out. Yeah. So you're doing this so you don't get yelled at by your instructor. You're wearing them on Wednesday. You better hit a long drive with them on then.
Well, I mean, I'll hit a long drive. I guarantee you I'm not going to win the long drive, but I'll hit the longest drive I possibly can.
You'll get into it as much as
possible. We're talking about it, and we're talking about these Octopus pants and what day to wear them. I said, hey, and they knew it too because TA's an ambassador for Ralph Lauren. And I'm like, if I wear these on Thursday through Sunday, one of the days, TA will – he may quit me as my teacher. He may fire me type deal. And so we need to wear them on Wednesday. And I'm like, perfect. We can wear them on Wednesday. They're in the short version, the shorts version. And so people can buy the shorts and not ask for the pants type deal. Because people can still ask me, hey, where can I get the Octopus pants? Because they only made 5 pairs of the Octopus pants. They've made them, you know, for shorts, really. And everyone seemed to want them in pants. So they were excited that I just, you know, to wear them on Wednesday so people don't have to ask about the pants. You know, they're just in the shorts version. That's it.
All right, Billy, last question. Are you one of those guys? I feel like there's two tour players. There's one that love golf and they will play when they're not playing and they'll consume it on TV and they think about it. And then there's a type two that golf is their job and they understand it's their job. And then when they're away from tournament time and they're not practicing, it's just kind of, it's business as usual. Are you a passion golf guy or are you a golf is my job and when I'm not playing, I've got other things to do?
You know, I would say I lean more towards golf as my passion, but I fall maybe a little bit in the gray area, but I lean towards the passion. I love golf. I love practicing golf. I don't always play a lot of golf when I'm home. It's just something I don't do, you know, unless I have like some buddies and we're playing a game, but it's tough for me just to go play golf without having anything, you know, on the line type deal. Like I still need to, you know, be playing for some money type deal or whatnot. Or I got to be able to enjoy the golf course because if I'm out there just hitting shots and it's randomness, you know, I'm not getting anything out of it. I'm like, man, I should be practicing. You know, I should be on the range hitting balls. And I love the practice. I absolutely love the practice. But at the same time, as much as I love golf and I watch it on TV, I have to actually sort of try and not watch golf on TV. It's tough, or at least the PGA Tour. I'm probably one guy that probably watches, you know, I watch a ton of the European Tour. I watch, you know, a lot of the PGA Tour, which I'm trying to back off of. Maybe a little bit of Champions Tour, but I'll actually watch LPGA, which people are like, are you serious? I'm like, yeah, I do. I just love watching golf.
Right.
So I'll watch LPGA sometimes, and that'll be my thing. But, you know, as much as I love golf and I have a passion for it, it still is my job. And, you know, I just feel like there's going to come a day and time that, you know, me putting in all the hours that I work really hard at on a daily basis, I'm just going to, you know, say, you know what, I'm done playing golf competitively. I don't want to do this anymore. I just want to go play golf and have fun and not worry if I hit it bad, not worry that, man, you know, my swing's off and I've got a tournament in a week type deal. So there'll come a time in my career where I'll stop playing competitive golf on tour. I tell people, I said, I don't see myself playing Champions Tour when I turn 50. I know a lot of, you know, people say they've always said that and they wind up playing, but you know, and I tell the Champions Tour players when I see them, when we start talking about stuff, you know, I'll mention something like that. And like, I said the same thing and look at me, I'm playing. And, you know, I'm like, yeah, but, you know, there's some other stuff that I know I want to do with my life and other hobbies that I've sort of already tried to, you know, plan for when I do want to step away. At the same time, we make so much money now in the game of golf. If you play well that, you know, you don't have to play a Champions Tour. And that's the way I'll look at it. And, you know, I just don't want to, you know, there'd be days there's going to come a time when I'm not going to want to put in a 10, 12 hour day of practice type deal. And then I'm going to expect, you know, to play well on a 6 hour practice day. So,
yeah,
I love golf right now. I love golf. I love golf. I mean, I'm a passionate about it. You know, one thing I wish I would do more of that I haven't is I wish I would play more golf when I'm not on tour and go play some of these unbelievable golf courses around the country. I know a lot of people play and they always ask me, have you played Cypress Point? Have you played this course? Have you played this course? And I'm like, no. And I'm like, what are you doing? I'm like, I get offered all the time to come play these courses and I turn it down. I just can't get myself to, you know, get away from, you know, spending 10 hours on the range and working on my short game and in the gym to go, you know, leave that to go play somewhere for fun and, you know, work on the game a little bit, but really not get everything out of it I need on my off weeks.
Yeah, you need to buddy up with Zach Blair is what you need to do. You need to become good friends with Zach Blair. And
I
then
know.
When you guys go to Boston, he'll go, let's go to Myopia, let's go to Essex, and you guys go to Pebble Beach, he'll take you to Cyprus, and maybe he'll make you do that.
Yeah.
You know, it's an interesting thing you bring up about the Champions Tour, and I'll let you go after this, but it
no,
is going to
be
interesting what the Champions Tour becomes with how much money's in golf right now. I mean, you know, a Ricky Fowler or a Jordan Spieth or a Justin Thomas or you, I mean, you're 31. You know, in 20 years from now, when you're 50, if you continue on the path you're on, I mean, is the incentive going to be there for these guys? And I'll be interested to see which guys continue on when they turn 50 and which guys kind of follow in what you're saying and they go, you know, I can retire and go live an unbelievable life and I don't have to be out there grinding.
Yeah, you know, there's a couple ways to look at it. There's guys on tour that played purely for the money, and they that's who they are. I mean, I can name guys, you know, I know the guys that play purely for the money and they're always just going to play for the money, you know, and that's what they worry about. They worry about how much money they make every week. And man, I missed this putt. You know, I would have made $50,000 more. I've never done that. And then there's guys that play golf because of the goals. They want to accomplish something in this game of golf. And those are the guys that are the top players in the game, you know? And I think when those guys meet their goals, they're going to be like, okay, well, now what do I do? You know, I've done everything I want to do in this game of golf. You know, do I really want to, you know, work to keep playing this game? You know, what am I playing for now? And I think with the Champions Tour, I think with the money that, you know, we've been fortunate enough to make and all the credit, you know, goes to the PGA Tour with everything they've done, goes to the credit to Tiger Woods for taking us to, you know, a level that I'm sure was never seen 20 years ago. That would have been 98. So let's say 30 years ago, making it on the PGA Tour. So, you know, we've been very fortunate, that type deal. So, you know, the money now, you know, the Champions Tour guys caught a little bit of it, but not the way that, you know, the guys in the generation of the Phil Mickelsons, the Jim Furyks, you know, the guys that are in their mid-40s, late-40s to, you know, early 40s to late 30s, you know, that's when, you know, the money started really becoming big type deal and you started making money. So I think with the Champions Tour, I think it's going to be interesting to see what happens. And I think, you know, what they should do and what a lot of guys that we talked about on tour, you know, just, you know, here's the conversation to talk about golf down the, you know, on and around the golf. Here's where we'll start talking about something with golf is Champions Tour needs to probably go to 45 because, you know, if the Champions Tour was at 45, then I may think about playing, you know, till I'm 50, you know, cause I'm like, you know what, do I really want to beat my head in on the PGA Tour for 5 more years? If, you know, I'm not able to, you know, compete with these guys. Let me go play the Champions Tour for 5 more years and I'll do that type deal. So I think that's something that could possibly happen in the future. If the tour thinks that they're not going to get the star names they need to make the Champions Tour stay alive.
Yeah, well, I think it'll be something interesting to watch. Billy, I appreciate you taking the time. Good luck the rest of the year. Excited to see the Octopus shorts, no pants, at the PGA Championship and well beyond. Congrats on the win earlier this year in New Orleans. And we'll catch up soon. Maybe we'll catch up early next year.
Sounds good. See you, Shane.
It looks like I'm a wreck. It's in the hole!
Many thanks to Billy Horschel and his Octopus pants for jumping on with us and chatting about life on tour. That was a great listen and a good insight into not just his past and his present, but also his future. That conversation about the Champions Tour, I'm sure, will be something I have with many more people on down the line. And just a reminder, the TPC Deer Run, where the PGA Tour plays this week, will look amazing on TV, sure. But you can experience that golf course. You can play TPC Deer Run. All you got to do is hop on teeoff.com by the PGA Tour, the official tee time reservation site of the PGA Tour, and book a tee time where the pros play or at any one of the website's thousands of golf courses. Plus, on teeoff.com, golfers book fee-free. That's right, no booking fees, every course, every tee time. Plus, as a valued listener here of the Clubhouse, you'll get to save an additional 25% on deal times with a single-use promo code TEEOFFBACON. And when it comes to golf equipment, we always want the newest driver paired with the ball that flies 5 yards further. The one thing that never gets enough attention is the thing that holds and protects your clubs and is essential to your on-course activity. That's your golf bag. Treat yourself to an upgrade today with the Ogio Cirrus bag. Check out ogio.com or your local golf retailer to get your hands on a Cirrus today. Stop carrying your bags and get something new. Upgrade your equipment. Ogio, the world's best bags. The Cirrus bag, I love. It's light, it's easy to carry, and it's got all the little tricks in the trade that you need for a golf bag. Thanks for listening. We'll be back next week. Also, just a reminder, if you're still listening to this, over the weekend on FS1, we'll be broadcasting the first ever U.S. Senior Women's Open. There's a ton of legends in the field. Check that out on your DVR, and DVR it because it's at Chicago Golf Club, which is an unbelievable piece of property, one of the most famous clubs in the country, and probably one that you haven't seen ever on television. So that'll be fun. It'll be Brad Faxon and I in the booth. Check that out over the weekend, and we'll talk to you next week.